Hey everyone, it's Cardiff. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. Back in the late 1990s, people got so excited by technology and internet companies that they started investing a ton of their money even in companies that they knew nothing about. Because that's what happens in a financial bubble. You see a new trend, you see your friends and neighbors making a lot of money in that trend, and you start taking more and more risks that you just don't understand. Then the bubble bursts, everyone loses their money, and things kind of reset until the next one. But financial bubbles are also fascinating for a reason that I don't think people consider enough. On the show today, I'm going to talk to Joe Weisenthal. He's an old pal of mine. He's also a finance journalist at Bloomberg and the co-host of the TV show What'd You Miss? Over at Bloomberg Businessweek, Joe writes that financial bubbles reflect the particular characteristics, the psychological and societal characteristics, of the times in which they existed, of the times in which the bubbles were inflating. So what financial bubbles are we seeing now? And what do those bubbles say about the present moment? That's coming up right after the break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Swell Investing, an impact investing platform. Invest in high-growth companies of the future, innovating in clean water, renewable energy, and medical breakthroughs. Claim a $50 bonus through swellinvesting.com/indicator. Support also comes from Capital One. Capital One's indicator is zero because they offer accounts with zero fees or minimums, and they offer accounts that can be opened from anywhere in 5 minutes. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Capital One N.A.
Joe Weisenthal, how are you, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
All right, so your story kind of starts in the 1990s and the technology bubble because it serves as a useful kind of reference point for what's happening now. So let's start the story there. What did the 1990s tech bubble kind of reflect about that historical moment?
The thing that people don't perhaps remember about the 1990s was that it wasn't just an internet bubble. People were just really optimistic about everything.
And they had a lot to be optimistic about, too.
It was a peaceful time because it was between the Cold War ending but prior to 9/11. So it seemed like peace was breaking out. Everybody was very into globalism, it seemed, and world trade and China entering the World Trade Order. People really thought that there was going to be peace in the Middle East. That actually seemed plausible at the time. And so it wasn't just that there was tech and the internet. It's that people thought that everything was really going to be good. That makes them inclined to make these big bets on an incredible new world.
Not just that, but technology itself.
Yeah.
Reflects a certain amount of optimism because the whole point of investing in technology is that you can improve living standards down the line. So if you're in an optimism bubble like in the 90s, technology is a sort of natural manifestation of that.
Absolutely. Connectedness, all the things. Remember all the fiber and broadband that people were laying out? We were all going to be connected as one just beautiful moment. And we saw this incredible overinvestment, both in the financial market side, but also in companies overinvesting because they just saw technology helping to usher in this great world that seemed to be within our grasp.
Okay, so let's now talk about what's happening now and what's happened in the past decade.
Yeah.
You identify two financial bubbles in particular. One is the bubble in cryptocurrencies. The other is the bubble in marijuana stocks. Let's take those each in turn,
sure.
Starting with cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies are, of course, digital currencies like Bitcoin. These currencies are not affiliated with any country's government or central bank. What was that bubble about, and what does it reflect about what we're going through now?
Cryptocurrencies, specifically Bitcoin, was specifically built on pessimism. It basically got launched right in the middle of the financial crisis. I think the first block was mined in January 2009, essentially right at the bottom. So it's inherently about solving a trust problem, or really a lack of trust problem.
And also it's about something that looks at the existing societal structures and says, forget it. Those things don't work anymore. We're going to try to go around them.
Right. I mean, you know that like crypto people are very evangelical in their views. They're always hammering you, and they're always saying
they love it.
They love it, but it's because the technology is nothing without the political belief behind it. It is explicitly a rejection of the Fed. It's a rejection of fiat money. It's a rejection of banks. It's a rejection of censors. The key word there, it's a rejection of lots of existing things, and essentially a way to conduct commerce without having to have any confidence in legacy institutions. And we know, and this is a key point in my piece, we know from surveys that confidence in almost every legacy institution we can think of has collapsed.
Has fallen, yeah.
The government, media, big banks, big business. We know that approval—
I think pretty much everything but the military, I think.
That's exactly right.
Lower confidence in the public. And so cryptocurrencies were, in a sense, a way to subvert those institutions. What about— cannabis, marijuana companies.
So cannabis is a little different. Of course, that bubble hasn't gotten quite as big as crypto did, but we know that it's inherently kind of a countercultural thing. I mean, cannabis has always been something that's on the margins, not fully embraced, even as other drugs like alcohol and tobacco are fairly mainstream. It's interesting, according to Gallup, approval for marijuana legalization has typically risen during times of societal stress. It really rose a lot in the 70s. It cooled back down during the 80s and 90s. It rose again in the 2000s, and it's absolutely surged since the financial crisis. So it's the kind of thing that, although it may not be explicitly as a rejection of all these institutions, there's no question it's part of the same story of something countercultural, something anti-establishment coming into the mainstream.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, this was a really intriguing part of your piece, which is that the bubbles we're seeing now reflect the particular psychology of the present moment. And here it's manifested itself in bubbles that are essentially geared at subversion, at anti-establishment.
Yes.
You know, sentiment, which I think is everywhere and on both sides of the political divide. These bubbles do not seem to have a specific political ideology attached to them.
Right. The only real ideology is sort of anti-establishment. There's another really fascinating connection between crypto and cannabis, which is the allure for the average person for once to beat Wall Street at something, because we typically think of Wall Street concocting all these products and then they sell it to the Main Street and Main Street is left holding the bag. With crypto, it's always been easier for an individual investor to buy it than some fund. That, in fact, that problem still hasn't been solved. And with cannabis, you still have situations in which institutions are very hesitant about the regulations, even buying the shares. And so part of the pitch that the promoters and the believers in both these asset classes will tell you is, this is your chance to get in before the big banks, very in keeping with the times.
So not just getting back at the banks, but actually getting ahead of them for once. The money men for once are not going to win.
Make the banks the last bag holder for once.
There's another thing I took away from your piece, which was really provocative, as you can tell, and I'd recommend it, which is this. I think it shows how hard it is to predict in advance the specific manifestation of a future bubble, right? Because if, in fact, it's the case that bubbles tend to reflect the psychology of the moment they're in, well, how can we predict what the psychology of the moment will be in 10 to 20 years? We really can't. The next bubbles might be a manifestation of other identifiable emotions like regret or nostalgia or happiness. We just don't really know.
It's really hard to know. And it's really hard to have any signs of when a bubble is peaking. You could go back to Bitcoin and find stories from 2015 and say, oh, this has got to be the top. So-and-so is collecting Bitcoin now, and say, or so-and-so has launched their own currency. It can't go up from here. And then it goes up another hundredfold. And so not only do we have a really hard time knowing what conditions will create or allow a bubble to take off, in the middle of them, it's almost impossible to know where it is in terms of its evolution. We basically only know in retrospect.
Joe Wiesenthal, the story is in Bloomberg Business Week. Check it out. Thanks,
Thank
man.
You.
The This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.